We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Good morning, everybody. This was going to be a day to start with some good news, but we can't do that now. I woke up this morning to news that's so painful for this whole city, but it's particularly painful for all of us who are parents, all of us who had a one-year-old in our lives or have a one-year-old, and that beautiful moment in life full of possibilities. And to wake up this morning and learn that a one-year-old child was killed on the streets of our city by gunfire is just so painful. It's not acceptable. It's not something we can ever look away from. It's something we have to address and stop. And it's just horrifying. A baby boy, Devel Gardner Jr., 1 year old, playing at a playground. And Devel was just starting his life, and his life was full of possibilities, and now he's gone. In a different incident, a 12-year-old boy was shot in the leg. This is not anything we can allow in our city. And it's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking for so many reasons. And it begins with the fact that there are just so many guns out there, and that is a New York tragedy and a national tragedy. But it's also another indication of the work we have to do. We have to heal. We have to bring our police and our communities together. We have so much to do. And it's just something to think about, that it can never be, you can never look away from something like this and be numb to it, because it just goes against everything we believe as New Yorkers. We can't let this happen in our city. So I'm just heartbroken today. I know so many of you are as well. And our hearts need to be with Devel's family. The family and Devel need to be in our thoughts and prayers. And let's observe a moment of silence. Thank you. We got to take resolve out of every situation like this. We can never give up. We can never give up on our children. We can never give up on our families. We can never give up on our neighborhoods, no matter how tough it seems. We've seen such tough days in the past, and we fought our way back. And it means the whole community has to be involved. It's never just about police. It has to be community and police together. Saturday night, I experienced a moment like that in Harlem. Harlem went through so much the weekend before, so many shootings, but people fought back. They came out to the streets, the Occupy the Corners movement, the Cure Violence movement, community leaders, elected officials, police, all together. And the message was clear. Streets of this city belong to good, decent, law-abiding people who just want to live in peace, and we will not let anyone break that peace. So, what a difficult reality, and yet we always have to remember the many, many good people who are fighting back. and who are never going to give in to the violence, and we have to remember that we can overcome it. Let me now talk about what I was going to tell you originally as the first thing to say, because it's so important, it means so much. And let me always say that whenever I tell you a fact, whenever something's reported to us, there's always more information that comes in later. But the fact that for the first time in months, we have a 24-hour period in which no one in the city died from the coronavirus. That is so striking and so moving, and it's a statement again about how the city fights back, how people do not ever give in. It's something that should make us hopeful, but it's very hard to take a victory lap because we know we have so much more ahead. This disease is far from beaten. And we look around the country and we see what so many other Americans are going through, so many other states and cities hurting so bad right now. So no one can celebrate, but we can at least take a moment to appreciate that every one of you did so much to get us to this point. 24 hours where no one died. Let's have many more days like that. And it's a reminder, of course, that this disease is such a formidable foe that it's been months and months since we've had a day like this. And we cannot let up. We cannot allow the slightest opening for the coronavirus. And so I can tell you with satisfaction, because of all the hard work you've done, we've gone through now three phases, and things are going well. And I can tell you more people are going back to work. More people are using the subway again, and they're doing it safely. I can tell you our healthcare indicators are staying in the right place. We'll talk about that in a moment. But we constantly have to look at all the information we have, to look for trends, to look for dangers, and to address them rapidly. We can't ever ignore a warning sign. So I want to talk about one of the things we're seeing today. Even though we have overall seen a huge reduction in the presence of the coronavirus in this city, we do see one trend that's worrisome. For young adults, we see the infection rate rising, and the particular group we're concerned about is 20-year-olds to 29-year-olds. Now, we see from 30 to 39 years old some increase as well, and we take that very seriously, but particularly amongst this younger group, 20 years old to 29 years old. We see a problem and we need to address it. And I understand for so many younger adults, it has been a really difficult time. Cooped up, disconnected, away from loved ones. There's so many things affecting people. And I understand that people are just yearning to break out of that. But we've got to keep telling everyone, particularly our younger adults, how important it is to stick to what has worked, the social distancing, the face coverings, getting tested. And so we're going to double down effort to reach younger adults, digital media, messages from influencers, a night of action outreach all over the city at outdoor spots where people gather, mobile testing vans, mass giveaways. We're going to do everything to reach younger adults to remind them they're not impervious. And I think many of us can remember when we were in that age range, you feel too often impervious, but everyone is susceptible to this disease, and of course, everyone unfortunately could spread it to someone else they love. So we're going to double down on making sure that younger adults really follow these precautions that have worked so well for all of us. And speaking of precautions that have worked well, unquestionably, one of the biggest game changers has been face coverings. Whatever it is, from the most homemade to the most elaborate, the face coverings have made a world of difference in fighting back this disease. We've given guidance before. We're going to give more guidance today. We want to go the next step. More and more people are now gathering in indoors locations. A lot more work sites coming back. So it's not just, you know, a supermarket or a pharmacy like it used to be. It's more and more people going to work. It's more and more people in retail settings around other people. It makes sense that even if you're trying to keep some distance, it's hard to do. Even if you're trying to keep that 6 feet, it's never easy in a lot of places. So here's the new guidance. If you're indoors and there's people around anywhere, even if you're in a big space indoors and there's people in some part of that space, keep that face covering on. We've talked before about if you were more than 6 feet away from people, but what we're finding is, you know, you start out more than 6 feet away from people, but you end up coming in contact with them or getting closer to them in the course of the day. So the guidance we're now going to give formally to all New Yorkers is when you're indoors, not in your place where you live with your family or the other people you live under the same roof with, but if you're at work, if you're at a store, even if there seems to be a lot of space, just keep that face covering on all the time. It's a good precaution. Anytime there are people around, keep it on. Now, as we said from the beginning, to get to the heart of the problem, beat back this disease, it's always about testing. So today we're announcing we're opening 10 new testing sites in the Bronx, Queens, and Brooklyn. This is free walk-in testing. Eight of them are open already, others coming soon. I want to thank our community testing partners who have been a part of this effort. The Acacia Network, the Institute for Family Health, and the Union Community Health Center, all stepping up to help their fellow New Yorkers get the free testing so we can continue to fight back this disease. So everyone, if you haven't been tested, go get tested for free. If you haven't been tested in quite a while, go get tested for free. It helps you, it helps your family, it helps everyone. And the fact is, as we are telling people how important it is to get tested, we are running into, just particularly in the last week, a fundamental challenge all over this country. More and more people getting tested, that's a great thing, but the outbreaks around the country are causing a huge strain on the testing labs. This was not a problem a few weeks ago, but it's become a real problem. Now, remember, we from the beginning have lacked testing. And this is something that frustrates me deeply. Our federal government never had testing in place from the beginning. They still don't have enough. So we now see in New York and around the country delays in getting testing results, and we need to beat that back. We can do some things to improve the situation here, and we're going to use every tool we can to fix it. But the federal government has to step up now because it's now becoming a national crisis. We used to have almost no testing. Now we have more testing, but if you can't get the results in real time, it doesn't help you enough. I talked about earlier in this crisis the Defense Production Act and the fact that the president had to invoke it at that point to get us PPEs, to get us ventilators, all the things we needed. Well, now we need it again because we need the lab capacity. We need the chemical reagents. We need the different pieces that allow these labs to do their work and do it quickly. And that will only happen if the federal government steps up. So, Mr. President, again, the Defense Production Act is there. Mr. President, all you have to do is say, I am now invoking the Defense Production Act to expand lab capacity in the United States of America, to make sure we have everything we need to get tests to people quickly. You can do that with the stroke of a pen. We need it not only here in New York, we need it all over this country. Everyone, you know New Yorkers are ready to play their part. You know your city government is ready with our test and trace corps and all the testing sites. But we need the federal government to play its role, and it so often hasn't. How about this be the time that it finally steps up? Okay, let's talk about today's indicators. First, the daily number of people admitted to hospitals for suspected COVID-19. The threshold is 200. Today's report, 56 patients. Second, daily number of people in health and hospitals, ICUs. Threshold, 375. Today, 279. And third, percentage of people tested citywide positive for COVID-19, threshold of 15%. Today's report, 2%. So we continue to show that progress. Let's stick to it. A few words in Spanish. Buenas noticias para la ciudad de Nueva York. Este fin de semana tuvimos 24 horas sin una sola muerte por coronavirus. Las tasas de infección están bajando en toda la ciudad, pero hay más jóvenes que se están infectando. Necesitamos que todos los neoyorquinos usen mascarillas cuando estén con otros o fuera de su casa, especialmente los jóvenes. With that, we'll turn to questions from our colleagues in the media. And please let me know the name and outlet of each journalist.
Hi, all. Just a reminder that we have with us today Senior Advisor Dr. Varma and Executive Director of the Test and Trace Corps, Dr. Long. With that, I will start with Henry from Bloomberg.
Hello, Mr. Mayor. I've got some questions about the police conduct over the past weekend and about the continuation of this spate of shootings. The police conduct element, I'll break it into two questions. My first question has to do with police conduct both at the Occupy City Hall protest, which continues to go on. There was a journalist who was assaulted in view of the police. He's saying nothing was done. The police didn't intervene. And I've heard from police officials that the policy of the city is just to ignore this and let it go on and hope that it peters out. And, you know, you see these people, the sanitary issues involved with these people hanging out there. This is an ongoing issue that the city just seems to let ride.
What's your question?
So the question is, what are you going to do, first of all, about the Occupy City Hall demonstration? And secondly, there are other, there was a demonstration in Bay Ridge where a guy was tased by police. He was shoved by police. Are you going to do anything about that? It's all on video. It's all over Twitter.
Thank you, Henry. So let me talk about both your questions. First of all, I saw the video from Bay Ridge. I did not like what I saw at all. That's obviously under investigation. And as soon as we have more on that, we'll announce it. Second, in terms of the demonstration near City Hall, it has reduced in size quite a bit. We need to always balance, first and foremost, safety, but of course, freedom of speech. And the NYPD is determining the best way to do that. I have heard the report about the journalist, and if that journalist chooses to press charges, of course, everything will be investigated as with any other potential crime. But to the best of my understanding, he has not pressed charges to this moment. So we take all of this seriously. But the bottom line is that we always want to figure out the best way to balance safety with the other rights that people have.
Next, we have Michael from the Daily News.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor. How are you doing?
Good, Michael. How are you?
I'm all right. Couple of questions. You know, as far as the police, there have been, you know, people I talked to in the police world have hinted without really saying explicitly that there's a slowdown in effect. And I'm wondering if you feel that that's true based on what you're seeing, and if so, what you plan to do about it.
So, Michael, I do not believe that's true. I've talked constantly with our police leadership. No evidence of that I'm hearing about or seeing. Chief Monahan spoke about this very bluntly the other day. I said he does not see that. We've got a lot of work to do. It's a very tough moment, and we've talked about this before. It's a perfect storm moment with so much that has happened in this city, particularly the constant, horrible impact of the coronavirus and the dislocations it's caused. But we will fight our way back. And last weekend was really tough. This weekend we made some progress, but still experienced this horrific tragedy. So we have a lot of work to do, and what I see is officers out there doing that work.
Second question has to do with the anti-crime unit. Do you regret the decision that Commissioner Shea announced, I believe it was in last month, to disband that unit? And is there anything in the works to replace it? My understanding is it was instrumental in getting guns off the street, and I know there were some issues with it, with police-involved shootings, but I was wondering if you could speak on that a bit.
Sure. Michael, it's a very good question, but I want to make clear. I've been watching Dermot Shea's work for 7 years. There's literally no one who understands the challenge of crime in New York City better than Dermot Shea. And he has, for that whole time of 7 years, I've seen him innovate. I've seen him ask tough questions, ask questions that were really about rethinking our approach. And as one of the architects of neighborhood policing, as one of the architects of precision policing, I've seen him in so many meetings say, hey, couldn't we do this a different way? And he came to the decision that the anti-crime unit, that work could be done a different, better way. A way that uses modern technology, a way that uses the skills of officers to achieve the same outcomes, to get those guns off the street, but in ways that also don't disrupt the relationship between police and community. And I think you have to understand that this whole seven-year effort has been to recognize that safety comes from a bond between police and community. That's what neighborhood policing has been about. And until the coronavirus, it was overwhelmingly successful. We have to fight back and become once again what we were. We can do that. I know we can do that. But it is based on that bond between police and community. And I think for him, that was the essence of the decision, finding a way to do the same results, but in a different and smarter way.
Next, we have Gloria from New York One.
Thank you. Mr. Mayor, I actually kind of want to follow up on Mike's question regarding the disbanding of the anti-crime unit. Because of, as Mike mentioned, the gun issue specifically. So I wondered if you are looking at gun seizures in the last few weeks, since we are seeing this uptick in shootings, what is your directive to the NYPD as it pertains to gun seizures? And are you seeing any progress at all?
The directive, Gloria, is the same. I mean, there's been, over the years, really, really powerful efforts to get guns off the streets. And a lot of times, honestly, I remember vividly when there were allegations of slowdowns or other problems, you saw the number of gun seizures continue to increase. So our officers know that that's this preeminent to get guns off the streets, and we have to do it in smart ways. And a lot of the things that work best is making community members allies in that effort, because a lot of times they have the information that is the single best way to get the guns off the streets. So it's constantly going to be a focus, and we are going to do more. We have to keep making adjustments. We're not going to live this way. So we're going to keep making adjustments till we get it right.
And my second question is on a separate topic. This is a question about evictions. And I was wondering what you're doing, or if there's anything in the works to prevent mass evictions in the next couple of weeks or months as people continue to go without work and without being able to pay the rent. I know that there's an Albany component to this, but for people here in the city, if they are evicted, they will become homeless here in the city, therefore making it a problem for your administration. So how are you preparing to prevent this?
Yeah, Gloria, it's not a problem for my administration. It's a problem for New York City. It's a problem for all of us if people are evicted through no fault of their own and end up homeless. It just doesn't make sense. The state needs to act. I've said it for months now. The state has to give folks who can document that they just don't have an income the ability to stay in their apartments, pay back the rent in the future when they have an income again. Look, I also think that there's been many calls for the stimulus to involve rental assistance and to address the fact that there's a fundamental breakdown here of people who just can't pay to stay in their home. That is the best solution. I am concerned about the stimulus because no one knows where it's going. But if you really said, how do we solve this problem at its root, it would be to have rental assistance money in that stimulus. But in the meantime, Albany needs to pass that law or rule that would allow for folks to stay in their apartments, if their problem's an economic one, to stay in their apartments and pay back later. If someone has the money, they should pay the rent. But if they don't have the money, they should not be evicted. And what we will do is continue to provide the legal assistance, as we have for free, for anyone facing eviction. Anyone who's facing eviction can call 311. And if there's any way we can help stop it, we will.
Next, we have Julia from The Post. Julia, are you there? We'll circle back to Julia. Next, we have Steve from Westwood One News.
Steve? All right, let's see what that's about.
Okay, We're going to try one more person, and then I wonder if there's a tech issue on our end. Next, we have Yoav from the city.
Hi, everyone. Can you hear me?
Yes, Yoav. You've brought us back. Okay.
Thank you. On June 17th, you announced that the NYPD was going to complete investigations where a civilian suffered substantial injuries within 2 weeks. 4 days later, there was a incident in Queens where a 29-year-old George Zapantis was, who had a history of mental illness. He was tased multiple times by police and he died. And it's been over 3 weeks since that incident, and there's been no completion of that investigation by the PD. I'm just wondering what you know about that incident and if you know why they're not meeting that two-week mandate.
Yoav, my strong understanding is there was an investigation that was completed. I talked to the commissioner about it around the time when the incident occurred. It was a horrible, tragic situation, but I believe that investigation was concluded. We'll get you the facts today, but I believe that was done in that timeline.
Okay. I mean, just my in speaking to the family and the lawyer, the family hasn't heard anything from the city. And I'm just wondering, generally speaking, when a civilian is killed during a police encounter, what's the general approach as far as communication from the city? Do you typically offer kind of an update on the investigation? Do you offer any kind of condolence? You know, what communication should the family be getting from the city at this point?
Again, Yoav, we'll get you more information, but of course there should be communication with the family. Of course there should be condolences offered. It's a humane and decent thing to do, and I believe that is what normally happens. But let me find out what happened here. Sometimes there are cases when the district attorney is involved or there's other extenuating circumstances. But look, we feel for our family members in any of these situations. They're tragedies, and we want to make sure people respect it and given information. So we'll follow up on that and get you more.
We're going to circle back to Steve from Westwood One News. Steve, it sounds like there's still a tech issue. We'll try again. Next, we have Jeff Mays from the New York Times.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yeah, Jeff, how you doing?
Good. Mr. Mayor, I have a couple of questions for you. The first one is, this is the 11th week of shooting increases. What's happening that police haven't been able to get the shootings under control? What's going on? In years past, you know, there have been upticks and there have been, you know, efforts put out and then you saw changes. But what's different this year?
Well, it's a very important question, Jeff. And I think the answer is staring us in the face. We've gone through a horrible dislocation in our whole society. Just everything has been disrupted. Families, lives, livelihood, so many people don't have anything to do. They don't have anywhere to go. They don't have a job. They can't go to school. They are dealing with so many challenges. The NYPD has been overloaded in so many ways, and it just keeps adding up. And most importantly, the criminal justice system is not functioning yet, and we need it to. And we're very, very hopeful that next month we're going to finally see that. But it really is a perfect storm. It does not compare to any previous year. And nonetheless, the NYPD is fighting back. Communities are fighting back. What I saw in Harlem on Saturday night was inspiring. People are not going to allow this. But we're up against an extraordinary challenge.
My second question is about that event in Harlem on Saturday night. You know, there have been calls from activists to defund the police and use that money in other ways that help create safety. But do you think, or events like that, is that your answer to those calls?
No, there's a lot of different pieces, Jeff. We obviously took money out of the NYPD budget, put it into youth programs, put it into social services, put it into recreation centers for young people. That's really the right direction. I'm glad we did that. But the fact that we're going to have to fight crime in many ways is also clear. We need the good work of the men and women of the NYPD in the streets of our city. We need communities to come forward, particularly through civic leadership, clergy, cure violence movement, do all the things that they can do. And they can do things that police can't do. And the NYPD is quite clear about that. Community voices, community members can achieve some things differently. And we need both pieces to happen. So we're going to devote ourselves to all of it. We are going to fight this back. I've seen us fight back from much, much tougher circumstances in terms of crime and violence. We're going to fight this back, but it's going to take everyone.
Next, we have Julia from The Post.
Hey, good morning, Mr. Mayor. Sorry about the earlier hiccup. I'm wondering if you have anyone in custody in the shooting of the one-year-old boy or any leads, any developments in terms of an investigation.
Yeah, Julia, I'm waiting for an update from the NYPD. As of about 2 hours ago, the last I heard, they did not have someone in custody. But every resource is going to be used to find this killer. And there's no question in my mind that the NYPD will find him. If you look at recent years, NYPD has more and more been able to find people in almost any and every situation. So I feel confident we'll bring this individual to justice.
Okay. And then, you know, you said this morning that with this tragic shooting of this baby and the 12-year-old, we can't let this happen in our city. This isn't something we can allow in the city. But you've been saying that for over a month now. In addition to the rising crime, there's rising racial tension like we haven't seen for decades. I mean, have you lost control of the situation here?
Julia, you, with all due respect, and others like to try those questions, it just doesn't make sense. This city is strong. We fought back through a lot before. We're going to fight back again. Remember, this is a day where we can't celebrate, but we note that this city fought back from being the epicenter of the coronavirus crisis to having a 24-hour period with no deaths at all. This city has fought back from crime and violence many times before. Yes, there are tensions out there. There's tensions between police and community, but the vast majority of New Yorkers want to make it work. They want to bring police and community together. And I can tell you, I think the tensions were a lot worse 10 and 20 years ago, and we overcame them. So, yes, we're going to move this city forward.
Last two for today. Next, we have Susanna from Cranes.
Hi, Mr. Mayor. Cranes did an analysis of COVID-19 contracts that found only 5% went to minority and women-owned business enterprises. In light of those findings and the Comptroller's survey that found MWBEs consider the city's procurement process burdensome, mysterious, and generally unhelpful, what will you do to lend support to those businesses?
Thank you, Susanna. It's a really good question. The procurement process is too complex. There's no question about it. And it grew out of years and years of valid concerns, because a lot of it, if you know about New York City, you know, 25, 30, 40 years ago, there was massive corruption in the contracting process, and a very elaborate set of checks and balances were put in place, but it's become cumbersome. And we've got to make it both smart and effective, but also simpler. So that's something we are working on right now. We've got to get more money in the hands of MWBs right away, and that's something our task force on racial inclusion and equity is working on right now. I know Deputy Mayor Phil Thompson, in particular, feels passionately about this and is working with agencies to immediately speed the amount of money that will go to MWBEs. The beginning of the crisis, it was literally a hand-to-mouth reality with the PPEs and everything else, wherever we could get supplies, whatever company had them. But now we've got to refocus our efforts on equity, and we have to do a lot more with the MWBEs. Do you have a follow?
I also wanted to ask about the Defense Production Act. With the health emergency largely over in New York, how would you have the president use those funds?
Susanna, it's for the whole country. Right now, we've got a nation that needs more and more testing. And unfortunately, we're experiencing the opposite reality now, where the labs, not just for New York, but around the country, are absolutely overloaded. And they cannot keep up. because we don't have enough lab capacity in America. Look what we've seen over the last 4 months. We didn't have testing. We didn't have test kits. We didn't have ventilators. We didn't have PPEs. It's a real sad statement on America that our ability to protect ourselves from a health crisis was allowed to atrophy so badly. I hope this is the ultimate warning sign that we heed and we build up a huge medical capacity in this country to protect ourselves. But right now, with the Defense Production Act, the president can order companies to convert their capacity to lab space, to producing the reagents and the other elements needed to speed up testing. This is a national emergency. And even though things have gotten a lot better in New York City, we're far from out of the woods. And look what's happening in so many other states. They're suffering. So the president needs to use all of his powers to address this issue.
Last one for today. Next, we have Steve from Westwood One News.
And good morning, Mr. Mayor. I hope you can hear me now.
There you go. You sound good, Steve.
There we go. Thank you very much. First, I wanted to offer my condolences to the family of that one-year-old child. That's an extremely horrific situation. I'm very saddened by that. I wanted to talk to you about the testing issue, and I've actually been personally affected by this. It's now 12 days since I took a coronavirus test at a city MD in Brooklyn, and I still don't have the results, nor can they find out why I don't have the results yet. I'm curious, and if Jay and Ted can weigh in on this. You know, the city and the state are continually pushing as many people as possible to get tested, saying everybody should get tested. But isn't that impacting, or one would presume that that impacts the contact tracing and the effectiveness of contact tracing if we're flooding the system with people who may not have come into contact with anybody who is a known positive? Does this make the most sense now? And how is contact tracing being impacted by this backlog?
I'll start quickly and turn to Dr. Varma and Dr. Long. But it's a great question, Steve. First of all, I'm really sorry you're going through that. This was not a problem. Again, a week or two ago, we were in much, much better shape. I'm not saying everyone got their tests back as quickly as they should, but you know, just a few weeks ago, things were moving pretty smoothly, and we had kept increasing the amount of testing effectively. And now we're up at 40,000 tests a day, which is something to applaud. We want that capacity. We want it to keep growing as we build toward the future in this city. But now we've hit this logjam. Now, again, in New York City, we think we're going to be able to do some things to address it locally. But we need the national solution going forward, because really we should be expanding testing everywhere on a much, much bigger scale. And that's what we've seen work around the world. So that's where we have to go. So we have to crack the code on this problem one way or another. But for our reality, it's really cropped up very recently. Dr. Varma, Dr. Long, why don't you jump in?
Yeah, this is Ted. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, excellent. I think the mayor hit all of the key points. This is a major national issue with our testing and lab capacity across the board. But we need to be doing as much testing as we can to keep the virus suppressed in New York City. And we're thinking about creative solutions in order to make that happen. One thing I will also say is that at New York City Health and Hospitals, at our 50 testing locations across New York City today, our turnaround time is much, much lower. So please come and visit us, and we would be happy to offer you a test for free. Dr. Varma, I don't know if you want to add anything.
Nothing critical to add. I mean, I think it's just really important to emphasize that we want to make testing sort of a routine and normal part of people's daily lives, because we know there is a risk of people transmitting the infection, even if they don't have any symptoms. So we do really want to keep pushing on that that issue at the same time that we're working to build more capacity.
Thank you, doctors. Go ahead, Steve. Did you have a follow-up?
Yeah, I do have a follow-up. When we look at the daily figures from coronavirus, yes, New York has come such a long way, and we're down to very low figures here, but we seem to be stuck in this range of more or less on either side of 60 new hospitalizations daily in New York City for coronavirus. And it makes me again wonder, we've been stuck in that range since mid-May. Is contact tracing working? Shouldn't that number be coming down even a little bit each day at this point, beyond 60?
Yeah, let me give you an important fact to go with that, Steve. It's a very good question, and I'll start, and again, either doctor or both want to jump in, they should. A number of your colleagues asked a really good question, and I asked this question internally as well. Of the percentage, of the patients who are going in for COVID-like symptoms, which is that report you get every day, when they were tested, when the test results came back, what percentage actually had confirmed COVID? So the recent information we have from a few days ago is 11%. So if you take it against today's figure, when you look at today, we have 56 patients in the most recent day who went to the hospital with COVID-like symptoms. 11% or so of them actually had COVID after the test was taken. So six people, let's say. So, you know, I would say that that says something very powerful. When we were at the height of the crisis, that percentage of the number went into the hospital, and then finally we got the test back and we got to confirm what their situation was, that was like 70 or 80% were coming back as COVID positive. So, no, I think it actually shows that something is definitely working with test and trace, definitely working with social distancing and wearing masks. And even as we've expanded the economic activity, the numbers are staying very low, and that's a good sign, but long, long way to go. Doctors, you want to add?
Yes, thank you, sir. So I think, again, the mayor hit all of the key points, but I want to emphasize two things. The first is that since mid-May, we're doing 3 to 4 times as many tests every single day of New Yorkers. So we're catching a lot more of the cases that we would not have necessarily caught before. And in terms of how that powers our tracing operation, as our city has reopened, as people have gone back to work, we have not seen a spike. And I'll give you a specific example here. In our tracing operation so far, there have been a group of contacts or people with known exposure that by the time we've called them, this is a group of more than 1,300 people, they were already actively symptomatic. So if we had not have called them, if the program didn't exist, if we did not reach out to them, they would have gone out and infected, take the average number, 3 more New Yorkers each. So because the program exists, because we had testing and because we have tracing, we were able to intervene for those 1,300 symptomatic people immediately, get them to isolate or quarantine, and prevent what could have been potentially 4,000 more new cases of coronavirus as the city is reopened in New York City. The program is working, it will continue to work, and we're going to continue to enroll many more people in the program. Dr. Varma, I don't know if you want to add anything.
No, nothing more for me. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you so much, doctors. As we conclude today, I want to go back to where I started. Devel Gardner Jr. lost at the age of 1. So for anyone who has a 1-year-old in your life or has had a 1-year-old in your life, picture that child. Picture what it would be like to lose that child. And you now know the pain this family and this community is going through. We have to fight back this violence. And it will only happen by police and community working together. It's a painful day, but we should never be in this city without hope, because we have fought through so much before. We have overcome so many challenges. We have fought back unbelievable and painful levels of violence because communities came together. So we have to do it again. And a day when we recognize that we have fought back this disease as well, which if you went back to March and April, you might have thought it would overtake us. It would be impossible to fight back. And yet New Yorkers have fought back. We talk about not a single death in 24 hours. It should be a message to every one of you that your efforts have meant something, and they must continue to the day that we are free of this disease and the day that we are free of this violence as well. Thank you.